Hi, Ram, and welcome to our weekly Insomnia Recovery Q&A. And today I'm super excited to have Coach Alina with us. Welcome.
Hi, Danielle. Nice to see you again.
Likewise, nice to see you. How are things on your end?
It's really good. Really good. Getting pretty busier with this time of year and, shorter days, more rain and so on. And you can see it on people's mood and in general, I would say it's normal time for having speed bumps. I had it too. That's when my second wave of speed bumps, that's when it happened. Like I had whole summer, that was like those several months where I had no problems. Like on my journey, I had like the gap period where I was like sleeping really well. And then the second round of speed bumps. Yes. Started exactly on September. So, and I see it also on other people. So if anyone has some problems now with like speed bump, I just want to say that's really, really normal.
Very much so. And same thing here. Started raining, it's a little cooler. And I was going to ask you just for, so the audience, the community gets to know you a little more, like what's your favorite season if you have one?
I think I like the spring, but from also the early one, because it's like, you just... The thing that you just see, like there's the beginning of something to look forward to. Yes. Because when it's already summer, it's kind of get used to it. It's hot but when this transition, even though there's more rains, but there's like hope,
Yes.
That's something to look forward to. And yours?
I used to live, I used to live most of my life in Sweden. Then I used to live in the East Coast of New York. And I think summer was definitely the favorite because it's very cold and dark most of the year. Summer is the only time that's actually nice. Now that I live in the U.S. West Coast here in the Pacific Northwest, actually winter is my favorite because summer is here so hot. Winter is very mild and we've discovered skiing. And so actually I love that now. So oddly, that's my favorite now. I see some people join, so do post your questions and we'll get to them. But first, before that, I wanted to take a chance to speak to you as we talked about before about tangibility and the idea behind it. So this Monday, I talked about it on the channel, and of course, I credited you with like having brought up this teaching. But maybe tell us for those of you who didn't see Monday's episode, maybe tell us a little bit about the idea and then how it came to you and how you saw this.
Mm-hmm. I would say like the wording tangibility, I would say you kind of like introduced it, the wording, but I would say like, I think you saw the post that once I wrote on Instagram, which where I basically described my sleep efforts, how they evolved throughout my journey. So in the beginning, when I still had this idea that there is something I can do to fix my sleep, there is something, some lever I can pull just so that my sleep will somehow miraculously will get better. So my efforts were more about certain things like supplements or let's say getting like blackout curtains. I was considering buying this weighted blanket. So I thought it's like there's some product or some substance or anything that is kind of like tangible that can actually help me sleep. And that kind of pretty soon proved to be very like useless. And then from tangible, my efforts turned into more like a ritual, something like it's not really tangible, but it's more something what I do or something what I avoid doing. So I quit drinking coffee. I thought it could be about me eating late or it could be about not being tired enough. So I was doing exercises or I would run for a long time. So just I could really exhaust myself. It was breathing exercises, sleep meditation, all the sorts of kind of like rituals. They're like not like really it's like still like kind of proactive behaviors. There's something I was kind of like bringing forward to solve the problem. And then when that didn't help, the choice of solutions kind of like narrowing down. So and my desperation was growing because I knew that if everyone says like, oh, melatonin helps them, and then I see it's not working on me, and I say, okay, there's something wrong with me because melatonin doesn't work. Then when it goes to this more like subtle level, when I try to do a sleep meditation, and I try like sleep meditation, which proves like it should work, or some special methods of counting and breathing and so on, and people say, oh, I just fall asleep in no time. and it doesn't work. So it kind of like every time I was kind of discarding the certain sleep efforts as ineffective, I also was losing hope. I felt like there's something wrong with me. So like my possibilities were narrowing down, and the last kind of type of sleep efforts was this kind of like very like intangible ones, which I usually call it like efforts thoughts. More, it's because it's more about like you think there should be certain mindset. There is, let's say, I should think this way and I shouldn't think that way. I shouldn't be able to focus on my sleep, or I shouldn't let worrisome thoughts to, you know, preoccupy me. So it was constant battle for a certain mental state, which I believed could lead me to peaceful sleep. But yet again, it was also an effort. And I would say these intangible ones are the ones which are, I would say that's where the majority of the journey of recovery journey is about. Because it's very like things we do in the beginning, all this kind of like things, we realize that yes, it's useless simply by educating ourselves. And I think like you did a really good job in telling people like about the, you know, actually how like no substance can actually produce sleep and things like that. But then there is like comes the time of intangible sleep efforts. And this is where things get more trickier, because it's not always obvious to ourselves. And then at some point you realize that even the desire to not have any efforts is also an effort in itself. So now that even gets even crazier, it's weirder. And then you get into this, I would say, state where you're genuinely don't know what you should do. Should you do this or you shouldn't do that? Because everything starts being an effort, and everything at the same time is not an effort. So it's like this kind of like a quantum thing. It's like either it's this or that at the same time. So it's so crazy. But and this is where I would say more like I would even philosophical view on that really helps. It's not about some methodologies, because at that point when you really realize that it's just about like learning to let go of trying, this is where the whole, I would say, journey is about really, exhausting your mind. So the mind keeps trying and trying and trying, and always comes up with a bunch of ideas. And at some point it will exhaust itself. And this is when the natural surrender will happen. This is the time when person is like, is genuinely doesn't know what to do. Maybe it's like a sad moment, or, you know, you like when you have like surrender sleep, also the very desperate moment. And this is when like you kind of let go, and this is when the magic happens, but not because you did something special. And many people at that area, at that phase, they often tell me this, that I wish I knew less about what I know now, because they know about this. Okay, there's courage and there's this tool and that, you know, teaching. And sometimes it becomes too overwhelming, because none of those can give like one clear answer. What is it that they have to do? Because everything can be, and at the same time, not be an effort. So yeah, that's like a very, you know, very tricky terrain to navigate. And I can completely understand why that phase is the most difficult ones, because the beginning is something like, it kind of goes faster and people get more kind of like learning and courage and they get more confidence. But the last parts, these are the tough ones.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love the analogy there with, you know, quantum physics, that cat, like, is the cat alive or dead? Yes. Or is it both at the same time? It's like, yeah, nice one. But yeah, thanks for sharing this. And of course, you know, it's so tempting to go like, okay, so what would you like, this could be a whole discussion itself, but we're here for Q&A and there are a bunch of questions here. So, so let's jump in and look at both a question and some comments from Sylvia. So it says, hi, Daniel and Lena, thank you for bringing me in a better place than 2 years ago. Nada and Said It, Forget It really helped in these videos. You're all a blessing to the community. Wonderful to hear this, of course. Thanks so much. My sleepiness has gone from 2011 to like 8:30 or 9:30. If I do not go to bed, it goes away. Okay. If I do not go to bed, it goes away and I'm up like an owl. Why is that? What do you think, Alina, when you hear this?
I would say maybe there's some sort of like maybe belief in that that you have to catch the window, you know, like if you don't, if you're not in bed by this time, then it means that you are doing something wrong. It's usually about the mind telling you something. And if you don't, if you dare not to listen to what it tries to like tell you, do this in order to protect your sleep, then it goes like, oh my God, you did something wrong. And that's why this, you know, rumination and then what if thoughts and so on kind of happen. And that's why sleepiness goes away. I don't see anything unusual about that. And the vice versa situation can happen as well. But this is also very, very common. I can completely understand why when you feel like you're getting like you're more sleepy earlier than you used to. And you feel like, do I have to go to bed now? Is it like, what if I will, you know, stay later or whatever? And then when you actually stay later and you go to bed, sometimes the brain will go, oh, you lost that good opportunity. And it starts kind of like develop that thought.
Yeah, exactly right. Very, very common question we get. And like, I like the analogy of like the surfer who's waiting for a wave and they feel like, oh, I missed the wave, then there's not going to be anything going on. But in reality, it's just our idea that we missed the idea that, oh no, I missed the wave, that makes us awake and alert. And as you said, the opposite often happens at the other end, which is in the morning when people are like, oh, I finally sleep when the sun is about to come up, which is sort of like the opposite, where the brain is like, oh, there's nothing more left to do. And we're like, okay, I'm not going to sleep. And then there's no pressure whatsoever. And then sleep happens. Yeah. So yeah, Sylvia, very, very common phenomenon. And we call it a surfer's window sometimes. I hope that made sense. Now let's jump to this one. Pat B says, I mentioned to Daniel that even though I have been over insomnia for quite some time, I continue to have sleep related thoughts. It occurred to me recently that the reason for this is, and there's a kind of cliffhanger here. Let's see, where do I find the continuation of this one? It is nowhere to be found. Pat, if you're here with us live, we'd love to hear that. For the reason for this is because it's very exciting. But yeah, Pat, again, if you're here, do let us know. I would love to hear the continuation there. Now, let us jump to this one. It's Carrot Cruncher who says, I have Asperger's and lupus, and since being on medication, I have lost the ability to sleep naturally. The sleep switch is damaged and just won't work. Of course, sorry to hear about the struggles and everything that's going on, Carrot Cruncher. But yes, when you hear this, Alina, what are your immediate thoughts?
Yeah, I would say like first, like, of course, when there is like some physical, like let's say discomfort, pain, side effect of medication, it can create sleep disruption. But at the same time, I would say as like the ability wise on the level of like functioning of the sleep, it's really doesn't seem like probable that's it will be broken because of that. In fact, I also had a let's say side effect from medication where I was like 2 days had zero sleep just on medication. I didn't have insomnia at that time. So the power of medication can be really, really play tricks on our minds when we actually feel like, okay, there's really something wrong with the mechanism because I have everything for all the perfect conditions for sleep and yet sleep is not happening. So I would say it might be have something to do with actually the sleep disruption that naturally happens, but then on top of it there is this kind of like reaction to that happening as well, which can create this perpetuating problem. So it's if we take it seem like let's say also like sleep disruption that happen, let's say if someone has to wake up several times, let's say, I don't know, someone takes care of a baby or something, there is definitely going to be sleep disruption. And when there is also like a fear around that, about being awake or not being able to fall back asleep. So it feels like, okay, now because there is also a baby and then there's also something broken with, you know, with sleep itself. But in reality, once we begin to demystify it, that, you know, sleep disruption can happen. And of course, this is like not... this is something that we cannot fully control, you know, unless the reason why sleep disruption happens is no longer there. But I would say understanding that, you know, the body is still able to go to bed, like, or go to this like switch to sleep, but maybe because of hyper arousal, it feels differently. It's just like the mind plays tricks on us. But of course, like, I get that, like, not like in the medical advice or anything, but I'm just like, you know, sharing that I also had this doubts about me taking medications breaking my sleep mechanism, and I was deeply convinced that I really messed up with my health and with my inner, like, whatever, brain or something like this. So I find it very common worry. But at the same time, I know that sleep disruption and insomnia is different. It doesn't mean that that your sleep does not work.
Absolutely. And there was just one more thing I wanted to add, which was this. It's such a common question, and not only like the fear that the sleep switch is broken, but a very similar thing is like, I can't turn off like my racing thoughts. Like there's no off switch for them. And oftentimes I share this, like that, you know, sometimes our thoughts, they never stop because we're looking for the switch. Like the actual activity of being like, where's the switch? How can I turn it off? Where are they? How can I stop this? That actually keeps us like in this fearful state, like looking for the switch, thinking that there is a switch that we have to find. That can keep us really scared and awake. So I hope that can help, Kara Cruncher. Thanks for being here and joining our live, of course. All right. We have some questions from Katya. Katya says, I know insomnia is a personal crisis and staying optimistic is the key to healing. How does one find strength to stay in the same mental state after several days with no sleep and experiencing horrible physical symptoms like drastically losing weight, loss of appetite, having to force food, and overall, when you feel like your body is falling apart, exercising courage is tough in such a state. I have confidence for the first few days and feels amazing, but then it is slipping away fast. Thank you. I can maybe comment on this first to give you some time to think and ponder here, Alina. But when I see that, and of course, like first I want to say, Katya, like we hear you, we feel like this is not an easy path. But I know insomnia is a personal crisis, and staying optimistic is the key to healing. The first thing I think when I see that is that it's actually very common among our clients, you know, students, followers, that there is this idea that I have to believe that this will work for it to work. I have to stay optimistic. I have to be positive. Otherwise, I won't get to where I want. And the thing is that this can sound so like paradoxical, but the beautiful thing with sleep and peace of mind is that it has actually zero requirements. It doesn't require anything. It's just something that happens all by itself when we're not trying to make it happen. And the thing is that, of course, when a client, student, follower feels optimistic, feels hopeful, and when that's part of the journey, that's nice. You know, it feels really, really nice to be happy and optimistic. But it's not required at all. It actually is not required. And the thing is, when we think like, oh, for this healing to take place, I must be optimistic, then there's pressure to kind of produce a certain mind state, which leads to its own internal struggle. So as difficult as it is, you know, seeing that I don't even have to believe, I don't have to be positive, I don't have to be optimistic, this sleep doesn't require anything, I think that can lead to a lot of relief. But those are my immediate thoughts. Like, what do you think, Alina?
Completely, and I agree with that, what you said. It's I just here to add is that, you know, like when Katya asks like how does one find strength to stay in the same mental state, and I would say this is like not realistic from point of view how our psyche works. We cannot be in the same mental state forever. We are always, it's like very flexible, and it's not really the case for insomnia, but even like if anyone could think about themselves like before insomnia, let's say, happened, like, were they always in the same mental state? Sometimes things, you know, like sometimes you don't feel your best, sometimes you feel optimistic and so on. So it's like, really, you don't have to keep the same mental state as you, Daniel, said. It's like, really, it's not a requirement for sleep. And at the same time, I also like, I find that it's very helpful to actually allow yourself to be in different mental states and really validate that experience, because like, you know, the several days with no sleep is going to make exhausted anyone. Like if you take even, let's say, anyone who's a good sleeper, and now you you keep them awake for several days, I doubt that they will feel optimistic about that. So why is it that they are allowed to feel, you know, like, you know, groggy and you know, not like it? And while when we have the struggle, we are not allowed to feel those emotions. And I think it's the pressure or whatever, you know, that keeps us feeling like we are doing something wrong is actually the idea that we have to be in the same mental state. but it's not, first of all, it's physiologically not possible because, you know, we are like the, you know, our mind is plastic and then ever changing, and that it's okay to go through some, this kind of like even downs of the journey. I constantly felt very bad after several days of no sleep. So it's really not a goal. And I would say, like, by listening to your body and actually really releasing that pressure to stay in a certain mood or to stay in a certain, it's kind of motivational state, is something that can actually truly set you free, because then you are allowed to feel frustrated. And because there is already a space created for that frustration, that frustration needs no, like, we don't spend any more energy on it. And if we don't spend more energy, pretty soon we feel more, even like we feel like not so bad because we allow the emotion be there. So that's, I would say, really just maybe challenging the belief that you have to be in the same mental state, because you don't have to. And I don't find it even realistic.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, when you were speaking here, it reminded me of this Instagram post you made maybe 2 weeks ago that I thought was really, really nice. And it was about permissions. Mm. You know, you have permission to feel this way and that way. And do you remember some more of those permissions?
Yeah, it's like you're allowed to take naps, although you don't have to, but you're allowed to. You don't have to wake up at the same time, or wake up super early on weekend when you just want to stay in. If there's no reason for that, you don't have to do that. You don't have to pretend that you like something when you obviously don't like it. You're allowed to sometimes to be sad, and you don't owe anyone explanation for why you feel the way you feel or why you sleep how you sleep. So it's more like, really, there's a lot of guilt. Yeah. I noticed on myself when we just feel like, this is not how I'm supposed to feel. So therefore there's something wrong. No, there's nothing wrong with you. It's the idea that you should be. That's what's wrong. And once you really uncover and give you, it's all about giving yourself permission. Whatever you feel like pressure, see where you can give yourself permission.
Yeah.
And then you, that's how it goes.
We should definitely make like a separate, like in sauna insight video about that. That's super nice.
I would say on kindness, like, because like many people don't understand the concept of what is self-kindness. They always have some idea what it could be, and when they find that, oh, I cannot stay kind of myself, like when I didn't sleep for several days, I'm not kind, I just don't want to be kind or whatever. And that's also like one of these kind of like, I would say, misbeliefs in how kindness should look like, because kindness can be, it can look differently. So I would say that also helpful for people to understand how to actually practice kindness without forcing yourself.
Well said. Now, for those who have been with us since the beginning here, we had like a cliffhanger from Pat here, who said it recently occurred to her that the reason she keeps having sleep-related thoughts is because, sorry, I have to finish, is the next one. And now we'll see, we're still in cliffhanger mode, Pat. Well, we're still here for at least a few more minutes. We'll see if we can get her thoughts on this one. Okay, let's look at this one. Brandon Anthony Official says, hi, guys. I was part of your last live together, and a message from my work account and reached out to Lena recently. Super helpful. Nice to hear. I've been less afraid of being awake. I'm still working on it, but so much better, and got nearly 7 hours last night, but still feel not again. Here we go. When I wake up like 2 a.m. and can't fall asleep. Use some of Martin Reed's techniques before I found you, and still realizing that CBT in general is a sleep effort and detachment is the only solution. So I think, and Brandon says permissions post was awesome. Saw that too. So yeah. Nice. Okay, I think we mostly just the Brandon maybe sharing a little bit, which is wonderful. But I think we have something to maybe talk a little about here, which is I've seen myself becoming less afraid of being awake. That's wonderful. Still better. And I got nearly 7 hours last night, but I still feel not again. Here we go. When I wake up like 2-3 a.m. and can't fall back asleep. Any maybe comments there that could be helpful, Alina? Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, you know, it takes time to really let go even of that, because what happens during, you know, the recovery process, it might be that the outcome itself could be satisfying, but there's also some fear on the background, you know, so we can sleep like well already, but the brain is still kind of like unsure about the situation. So it's going to keep kind of like poking at you, like, okay, are you sure you're fine? You know, like, maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe it's like, really, it's like, so I find that this kind of like having some thoughts about even during your better nights is something, is just the automatic program that is still kind of going on. So in a way, when we focus on it too much, when we focus on it like, oh, but I shouldn't be thinking that way, that's when it kind of like makes it stickier. But when we normalize it, and again, we can give ourselves permission, yeah, like, it's okay, like, I'm still in the middle of my journey, there could be good nights, I can feel better, I can feel more motivated, and there can be at the same time be some thoughts. I don't choose those thoughts. And if I had the choice here, I probably wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have them, but because I don't have them, so I'm going to do my best with that, you know? So it's like, again, kindness approach, but also like allowing things be and not being hard on yourself for having it or being frustrated by it. So it's like really, again, allowing, and that could really smooth things out, because then it's like, when we don't resist it, it just stops happening eventually.
That's, yeah, absolutely. And my two cents to that one was you know, when somebody tells me like, you know, yay, I slept 7 hours last night, then my reaction becomes like, that's nice. You know, that means, yes, you were less afraid, you were trying less. But at the same time, there's a little bit of like, when we celebrate like a victory, yeah, we can get into that mindset of like, oh, I achieved something. How can I do that again? How can I repeat that? Which is tricky. So I think it's nice to just be like, oh, that's nice, that happened, without trying to repeat it or anything like that. And same thing when it comes to numbers are so tricky. Like when we say like, oh, when I wake up at 2, 3 a.m., then it's not so easy. I have these thoughts and worries, et cetera. Then kind of my standard rhetorical question becomes like, how do you know it's 2, 3 a.m.? You know, just an invitation to maybe not check. It can help. So and CBT, and like Brennan says, CBTI, a lot of that is a sleep effort. Detachment, I think you're onto something there. I totally think. Okay, JK All Day says, hi, Danalina. I'm considering doing the Insomnia Immunity Program. Glad you are. Are the live classes in the program the same as the live YouTube open classes, or are they for members only? Well, you've been to many of our drop-in classes, and how would you describe them?
They are a great opportunity to really get, I would say, both support from other people who are struggling, you know, like this, because there, basically what happens is that coaches and people who are still on the journey get together, and they really get into like very like details of their recovery. So it's like they have a possibility to really kind of like ask a follow-up questions and really get into the bottom of, you know, like of the situation that they're having, and understand it better. So I would say it's really valuable, because now when we go like, you know, this life, it's really great, but at some time, maybe when we answer, and then the person will go like, yeah, but something else like they want to ask. So it's usually like, you know, in the comments, but there I would say it's a possibility to actually give like really like real time conversation. So, and at the same time, the value of it that you also can hear others sharing what they're going through, and most of the time people can relate. So basically by a coach answering someone's question, you also get an answer for yourself, because you know that you've been in similar situation. It's a really good like place, and it's really friendly. It's really, I would say, people feel safe there, definitely. They don't feel like, okay, like being pressured to talk, but at the same time, they don't feel any like, or at least like I didn't get the feeling that there was like, you know, something like judgment or whatever. It's like really, really for a friendly place. I think you made it a really good job, and not only the dropping classes, but also the chat for this Insomnia Immunity Program, because there is like really huge support. Like if you need encouragement, that's the place to go. Definitely. It's no doubt.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to hear the question. but yeah, to answer your question, to answer the question, like straightforward, the live classes are like, we usually have like 4 or 5 people in the dropping classes. They're Zoom, and it's a back and forth. But yeah, it's for members only of the immune program. But like to your point, Alina, I think the value of coaching, I think so much of it is in the back and forth, you know, right? Question, follow-up question, reply, follow-up question. Like, and that's like in that back and forth, like so much magic comes from that, really. All right, let's see. We can do like maybe one more. Mary says, hi, what to do when your insomnia is so intense, but you're actually not scared of being awake anymore? I thought when you're not scared anymore, it would ease. Mm-hmm. All right, so insomnia is intense, but you're not scared of being awake anymore. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts when you hear this?
I would maybe dig in a little bit what she means by like not scared of not sleeping, because it might be that the idea of like, you know, okay, when I'm scared, that means that I have, let's say, heart palpitations, or I have this like racing thoughts. But hyperarousal, based on this kind of like still like threat detection, is much broader than that. So sometimes it can be also alert state. So as long, it might not be actually fear, because maybe the fear is not intense, but just the simple kind of like notion that there is some problem with it, it already can launch this process, the same process that created the fear in cell, but now it's kind of like, you know, there is no this prominent fear component as we normally experience, but there's still like the brain feels something is wrong. Something was wrong and it has to be fixed. And basically by the first part of the question was like, you know, I'm having so much intense struggle with my insomnia. And this already says that, you know, the brain detects that this is a problem, because if it wouldn't be really a problem, I would say there wouldn't be even a question in the first place. So it's more like, you know, like it's still like that it's not, it should not be happening, which is normal. Like it's really normal to question that. And I also had these cases when I personally had, I don't think about sleep, I'm not really particularly like anxious, but I'm more, it could be even like maybe even freeze mode, because freeze mode could feel like this. You're just like there's no like some obvious sensation, but you're just like kind of like, kind of frozen. I don't know, like no particular emotions, nothing. It's like really strange, like, place to be, but at the same time is also another form of hyperarousal, which is, it has the same form, and the approach to it is exactly the same as if we would deal with the fear or, you know, anxiety. So again, non-resistance and being very gentle and kind to yourself on those days. What is it that you could do for yourself that could make you feel better in the moment without thinking about how it will impact your sleeping or what will happen in 10 minutes. So if it makes sense for you to do something now, let's say, whether it's just going for a walk or crying or just anything, it could be really anything that can bring some relief or make you feel like more comfy in that moment, that's worth considering, I think. Yeah. And then eventually it will go away, because that's not, again, like our psyche is not this like fixed. We are not in the same mental state forever. So there might be a period where we feel like more of this kind of like numbness or, you know, nothing, but still there is something. And then at some point it will be more like release. Maybe there will be again, like some, you know, hyperarousal, but again, go. So it's never like on the same level. It will not stay the same forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super, super well said. And like, to your point, like how we experience fear can be very different, you know? But I also read, what you said first here was like, sometimes it's helpful to kind of like really examine, you know, what we're thinking, etc. And one comment, and I'm not saying this is Mary, this is you, Mary, but I think when somebody says like, I'm really scared, I'm frightened and all these things are happening, something I often say is that, well, you have the courage to see that, you know, you have the courage to see that fear is what's driving this. And that is a foundation, because the person who's sort of like, they don't want to see that. They're looking for like, oh, it can't be that, because that's like the thought that this is driven by fear is scary. So it must be, so they look for something else, like, oh, maybe it's just a hormone. Maybe it's something easy fix. Maybe I can just take a supplement. That person has really not found the courage to see, no, this is fear. It is fear I'm dealing with. And it may, you know, that came to mind a little bit of that component of maybe saying like, when we feel like, okay, so like when we say like, oh, I thought I was just scared of being awake, but I'm not scared of being awake anymore. So what is it? Well, as you said, there must be some component of fear here. Otherwise, there wouldn't be an interest in like, why would you even have the interest to ask a question if we're not scared at all? And maybe we are scared of being awake, but we are scared to see that. Maybe we're scared of something that surrounds insomnia. But basically, you know, if there isn't some form of fear, anxiety, preoccupation, worry, then I wouldn't, you know, I don't think there would be like an insomnia struggle. But seeing that, like having sort of the courage to see that fear, find what we're scared of, that leads us to like having that foundation that we can build upon, something like that.
I mean, again, I totally agree. And I would say sometimes it's not obvious like that what we are scared of. Sometimes like we really feel like we are not like if I don't sleep, that's fine. But I don't want to be tired next day. And next day I have something important thing. So I'm okay with staying awake, as long as I will not feel tired. But again, it's kind of like this, what do you call like secondary fear or like
secondary attachments.
Attachment. So it's like you feel like you see the shortcut. Okay, I'm fearing something else. It's not about this, but at the same time, it's kind of like it's connected to it. Might not be like exactly or particularly in this moment of this, but maybe like whatever, like the consequence of not sleeping. That's what is scary, or something that, I don't know, something that connected with it, not directly the particular fear of not sleeping this night, but it could be something kind of like standing nearby that fear.
Yes.
I'd say.
Absolutely. Very well. Well, we will wrap up here. I want to thank everyone for being here with us and sharing their part of their journey and all the questions. And look forward to having you back real soon, Alina. And we should do a specific episode on these permissions. I love that post.
Yeah, I would happy to do that as well.
All right. Well, take care now. Take care, everyone. Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye. Bye.